then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I've heard orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be, in the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more bore for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder, by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night, many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Mourners passed along the valleys like the man she's lonely crew, and a thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's February the 24th, 2010. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest.
By the river, that dark mass of men were seen, far above their shining weapons on their own beloved green. Death to every foe and traitor, forward strike the marching tune. And hurrah, my voice for freedom, tis the rising.
Okay, welcome back to Radio Free Northwest. This is podcast number 5. We'll get right to your questions and suggested discussion topics. The first question or query or possibly criticism I want to go over is one I got from several listeners in one form or another after the last week's podcast. And this was something along the line of, Harold, you're talking about things on RFN that you shouldn't be discussing in public. You need to concentrate on issues. And by issues, I presume you mean the trusty old pabulum of the right-wing news commentary, where you have some fearless leader basically reading the newspapers out loud, or in these modern times, reading the internet out loud, and telling you at great length how horrible it all is. Oh, isn't this terrible? Look at what they're doing to us now. Oh, boo-hoo, it's all so horrid and bad, and we're all so doomed. Wah! That kind of thing. I'm sure some of you can name certain people in our own ranks who have made a living for years doing just that, news commentary. Well, guys, I know what you're referring to from last week's podcast, but if by talking about issues you mean I should be going off on long tirades calling Barack Obama names and quote-unquote exposing the Jews, rambling on and on about how the Federal Reserve is controlled by Jews, ranting and raving about specific black crimes against whites, of which there are always horrible examples, and basically doing the same thing the movement has been doing for the past 60 years, no, I don't need to be talking about those things. You see, there's 5011 other radio commentators on the internet out there, as well as internet writers who are doing just that, and some of them are actually pretty sharp and doing it a lot better than I ever could. Not that I won't ever talk about system politics and so-called issues to at least some extent, because for one thing, the Northwest Front needs to demonstrate that we're capable of actual political analysis and big-picture strategic thought. But what we're going to be talking about most of all on Radio Free Northwest are the two subjects that actually have a real-life bearing on securing the existence of our people and a future for white children. And those two subjects are Northwest independence in a sovereign homeland of our own and the crucial issue of white character. What we are going to do, how and why we are going to do it. And that means that most of these podcasts will be devoted to esoteric spiritual stuff and nuts and bolts advice on organizing. If you just want to hear somebody say nigger, nigger, nigger and kike, 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 there's plenty of other places on the net you can go to. All right, moving right along here. I need to preface this next comment with the explanation that over the past week, I've been messing around with Twitter.com, trying to get followers and whatnot. I asked people on the list for any comments and suggestions as to how we could use Twitter to reach young white people. And I got this response from Vernon in Arkansas. Dear Mr. Covington, this is another Facebook thing. I've been active in the movement for some time now, and nothing, I mean nothing, will motivate young white men to do anything. They sit on the couch, they play video games, and they live with their mothers until they are 30. The older generation has to pull this off if it is going to happen at all. Okay, Vern, thanks for bringing up this topic, because it's a very common attitude within the movement. It's something I need to address, and which I will need to deal with many times in the coming months and years, so I might as well get started chipping away at it. First off, Vern, understand, I am not snapping back at you or criticizing you. I'm not saying that you're not right, because you pretty much are, and I'm not saying that you're not justified in being disgusted by this phenomenon. This view of young white people as essentially useless is widespread in the movement. This is by no means the first time I've heard something like this said, and in fact, I've been known to say things like this myself on more than one occasion. There's a lot of truth to it, and the truth hurts. But the fact is that we in the movement have developed a bad habit down through the years of writing off certain huge sections of our own race, mostly to avoid the boring, repetitious, and incredibly frustrating task of trying to shake these people out of their slumber and wake up their ideas and energize them with the truth. Sorry, guys, there's no way we're getting off the hook. We have to deal with these dumbass people and try to slap some sense into them. Trying to reach white people, any white people, with the truth can drive you batty. It's like trying to sculpt a feather pillow into shape. The minute you step back and leave it alone, it flops down into a blob again. But we can't give up on them any more than any race or any species can ever give up on its own young. Like any race or any species, our young are our future. God help us. Guys, we're going to have to understand that this project we have in mind of securing the existence of our people and a future for white children in a homeland of our own will eventually involve quite a bit of storming the barricades, quite literally. And that cannot be done by an army of middle-aged people in their 50s, like me, or by an army of senior citizens in their walkers and their wheelchairs. That's probably my main criticism of the whole Tea Party thing. There are way too many gray heads in there. I give the Tea Party crowd very high marks for building a genuine grassroots movement of white people in only the single year since the One and his Jewish handlers have been in power, but in all the media coverage I've seen of their events, I don't see many young people in there. Maybe I just haven't seen footage of the right events, I don't know. I suppose it's a minor comfort to know that we're not the only ones who are having trouble recruiting youth. I also remember that conservatives and traditionalists had the same problem back in the day when I was with the Open Nazi Party. Back in North Carolina, we used to get invited all the time to NSRP and Citizens Council meetings, and I'd get the call in Raleigh from some little old lady who was our secretary, and she'd say, "Please come to our meeting in Kinston or Goldsboro or wherever it was on Saturday," and then she'd add, "and bring all those fine young people with you." Now, a lot of those people were crusty old red, white, and blue segregationist conservative types who didn't particularly care for National Socialists because of their memories of World War II, which I can understand, but they were willing for us to come because they just wanted to have some speakers who didn't have white hair, and they wanted to see and hear some white children running around yelling and screaming. Bear in mind that this was back when I myself was in my 20s. There is one thing that you have to say about National Socialism. It's youth-oriented, and it attracts young people and young minds. Most of the young white boys who more or less convert themselves based on their own personal reading and thought and research when they're in high school or college don't go through this usual process of starting conservative with the Republicans or the John Birch Society or Hillsdale College or whatever, and then heading ever rightward towards National Socialism or white revolution over the next 20 years. Racial autodidacts go right straight into National Socialism at age 19, myself being a case in point, but I digress again. Look, I will concede Vern's point. Today's white youth are pretty much a waste of rations, and let's be honest, Beavis and Butthead and Otto the bus driver and the comic book guy from The Simpsons and Chris Griffin from Family Guy, these are not cartoon characters. They are drawn from the life. Most of you older people may not get those references that I just made, but young white people in my listening audiences will, and that's the tragedy because those are their role models. Many young white people, especially young white males, have grown up watching cartoons like that, The Simpsons and Family Guy and South Park. It's part of their social conditioning, and it's given them hideous role models. I suspect this may be deliberate on Hollywood's part. When I was growing up, adult cartoons were unheard of. Children watch cartoons like Huckleberry Hound, A Deputy Dog, and Johnny Quest on TV after school and on Saturday mornings, but we generally gave that up around age 11 or so, and after that we spent our Saturdays riding our bikes around the neighborhood, or hanging out with our friends, playing sports, whatever. Nowadays, we have adults who spend a large part of their time off watching cartoons, liberal propaganda like The Simpsons, and sick, filthy stuff like South Park on television and on computer games, so forth and so on. They're constantly presented with images of a world that is not only immoral and revolting, it doesn't even exist. Arguably, the biggest problem with white youth today is that it lasts too long. Young white males used to become a man at 16 back in the frontier days, or in modern times at least 18 when they got drafted and had to go into the army. Sorry, I know I'm digressing like I always do, but just to show you what I'm talking about, that I understand the problem, I need to describe something that happened to me a few years ago. Around the turn of the century, I was working in an IT-related major corporation in College Station, Texas, which is the home of Texas A&M University. My fellow employees were, on the whole, much younger than me, mostly IT Master of Science degree holders or candidates, college kids who were supposedly the best and the brightest that America has to offer. And to be fair, there was something to that. Some of those kids were pretty darn sharp, professionally and personally. But during the little over 3 years that I worked there, I noticed something about our up-and-coming white generation, and that is a general immaturity and irresponsibility lasting well into adulthood, which simply would not have passed muster back in the 50s or even really in the 70s. It's because there is no real demand these days for white kids ever to grow up. And this applies especially to white males. Part of it may well be because there hasn't been a draft in this country since 1972, and these punk kids weren't dragged away to fight a war like my generation and my father's generation and my grandfather's generation were. I wasn't drafted myself, but I had almost as little choice since I went into the Army at age 17 as a volunteer because my father threw me out of the house and it was either the Army or flip burgers. Which is a very similar situation to what a lot of white kids today find themselves in and will be finding themselves in more and more. I would favorably compare 2 years in the ranks to 4 years in any college as far as waking up some kid's ideas and forcing him to shape up. I'm not saying that Jew wars are a good thing, and of course they're no good at all to white kids who come back in body bags and missing an arm and a leg, but I will say that these punk kids of today would all benefit from a couple of years in a decent white man's army, if such a thing existed. That's one of the reasons that the draft constitution of the Northwest Republic demands mandatory military service for boys and other national service for girls. This business of adolescence lasting into your 20s and 30s is bulldust. The minute kids leave school, they need to grow up and start earning their keep and paying their own freight like I did. Finally, getting back to my story about that IT company in Texas, I noticed things like these ostensibly intelligent white boys bringing in their childhood toys like plastic dinosaurs and transformers to work to set up in their cubicles. I also noticed that when I went in the smoking area during lunch or during breaks, that you'd always find the white males clustered off in a corner talking about video games like World of Warcraft and whatever this online video game they were all playing was. I don't think it was World of Warcraft. I think it was something else. But these were guys in their late 20s and their 30s who should have been married and raising families and taking part in civic and political duties in the community. They talked about their imaginary identities as warrior dwarves or dragon slayers like they were living in the Lord of the Rings movie, and in a sense, they were. The internet has allowed young white men to create and, to some degree, to live in a fantasy world of magic and adventure and devoid of political correctness, a kind of escape from the real world, which is truly insidious because it's just as addictive as alcohol or cocaine. Why bother to read and educate yourself and follow politics and think about what's going on in the world when you can leave work, go home, order in a pizza, and sit up until 2 o'clock in the morning living in a magical world with dragons and dwarves and warrior maidens in armored bikinis? So what if it isn't real? For white boys, the fantasy is so much better than the reality. Why bother to try and change the reality? In the same smoke hole in that company back in Texas, the white women employees would always be bunched together over in another corner regarding these overgrown adolescent boys with a kind of resigned disgust. I noticed there was almost never any interaction between the two groups. It was like third graders in a schoolyard, with the boys in one corner and the girls in another. As horrific as it is for me to admit this, I can understand why so many white women these days are choosing non-white sexual partners and non-white fathers for their children, especially Asians and Arabs and even Latinos, who, on first glance, at least appear to have some kind of work ethic, some kind of maturity and seriousness, and some kind of willingness to show responsibility. Although those white girls who make this bad, bad choice more often than not end up paying for it in terrible ways, sometimes gruesome ways. The fact is that a normal woman wants a man in her life, a mate and a provider and a good father for her children, not just another big baby that she has to carry along with the real kids. Again, let me say that while I condemn these women who betray their race without reservation, I do understand why some of them do it. And it's our fault, because white males refuse to grow up and get out of the animal house stage of our lives that we should have left behind at about age 20 at the latest. Tell you what, I'm going to go for a music break here. This is a request from Colonel House. I've never heard this piece before, and I assume it's skinhead rock, so you can't say we don't have variety on here. This is Saga, and the cut's called Never March Alone. Okay, Vern from Arkansas, to drag myself kicking and screaming back to your point, I have to agree, right now, as things are, as people go, the overwhelming majority of young white people are useless and even detrimental to our long-term racial interest. However, other than my contention that we're stuck with them and we can't write them off, I would like to add the following caveats, ifs, ands, and buts. First off, the political, racial, and economic situation in North America is not static. It is changing all the time, faster and faster now that Obongo and the Jews who control him have taken power. And people change along with situations. People change along with their environments. People change along with their personal circumstances, along with their family and community circumstances. And above all, people change along with their economic circumstances. Most people, young or old, are capable of change if that change is forced on them in some way that they can't avoid. That includes the present more or less damaged crop of young white people. Remember, they have in their chromosomes the same potential that all of the explorers, inventors, and conquerors of our race had. Genetically speaking, we are the same people our ancestors were. It takes more than 3 generations of liberalism and political correctness to erase 10,000 generations of racial heritage and instinct. We are now entering a period of this country's history when, at long last, the fabled balloon that we all claim to have been waiting for all these years is finally starting to go up, however sluggishly. These white kids who are cocooned in their fantasy world with their computers and their MP3 players and their rooms and their basements are about to get a big punch in the mouth from reality. They aren't going to be able to stay cocooned in there too much longer because upstairs in the house, mom and dad have probably lost their jobs, or they're about to, and the house and the basement itself ain't going to be there much longer because it's about to be foreclosed. Back in the day, I used to tell people that niggers were our best recruiters. You know the old saying that a conservative is a liberal who's been mugged? For every white person that any of us or any of our books or writings have ever converted to racial truth by sheer reason and power of our arguments, 1,000 more have been forced to see the light by circumstances and conditions in their own lives. And those circumstances are about to come crashing down on young Beavis and young Butthead and drag their pale, skinny asses right out of their rooms and their basements and rip those video game headphones right off their ears. Some of you have read A Distant Thunder and A Mighty Fortress, two of my Northwest novels, and you'll remember two of my young Northwest volunteers, Shane Ryan and Cody Brock. I deliberately created those characters with the kind of backstory that will eventually produce our young revolutionaries in real life, and that scenario is approaching with the speed of a freight train. If a conservative is a liberal who's been mugged, then Shane and Cody are Beavis and Butthead who have had their house foreclosed and who have been forced into the army or the job market at age 17 in order to escape having to live under a bridge. Shane Ryan and Cody Brock are out there today in the real world, all across the Northwest and all across America. They're probably about 10 or 12 years old right now, but when they hit 16 or 17, they're going to find themselves standing in a line outside Mickey D's, begging some female manager for a chance to flip burgers for $7 an hour, and then losing out on those jobs to Juan Mendez and Ichiku Kabumba from the Congo, who are willing to flip the same burgers off paper for $4 or $5 an hour. Some of these white boys will still try to bury their heads in the video games as they sit under the bridge, and some of them will turn to drugs and petty crime and other self-destructive behaviors. A lot of them will be forced into the military, not just for a paycheck alone, but for the chow hall and for some kind of medical care for their families. But when the military's through with them, those guys are going to be tossed right back under that bridge, and then they'll be ready for us, Vern, and we have to make sure that we're ready for them. In the meantime, we never, ever give up trying to interrupt their video games and catch their attention. That's one of the reasons why we're using the internet so much, despite the fact that I myself detest it. I say again, as dumb as these young white idiots are, as frustrating and as enraging as they are, we have to keep on trying to reach them. Because I also say again, like it or not, they are our future. Young white people are, in fact, capable of responding to the call of racial duty. They just won't do it. But there are specific reasons why they won't do it, all of which have to do with the attitudes and practices and ideas that have been socially engineered into them since 1945 or so. In many cases, that social engineering will probably prove too strong to break through. But then again, it won't be us that dismantles this false liberal belief system. It will be the force of outside events that knock it down. But we must keep on trying to find ways to break through and snatch our young people back from these Jewish monsters who have so cruelly poisoned their minds and contaminated their souls. Take it from me, Vern, from a father who knows, no matter how much your children may disappoint and sadden you, you never, ever give up. I've got a fairly long rave planned for the final part of the show, so I'm going to take our second music break now. Don't worry, it's not another incomprehensible piece of Irish Gaelic or any of that dar furrin stuff. This is for all you American yahoos out there who like actual, honest-to-God, white American folk and traditional music. This is the Pine Tree String Band with Salt Creek. Thank you. Okay, for our next topic discussion, several of you have forwarded to me an article from last week's news media, which I will read without attribution lest somebody get upset about me pinching their copyrighted material, and it runs as follows. A Kentucky man has been arrested and charged with posting a poem threatening President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama on a white supremacist website. The U.S. Secret Service said Johnny Logan Spencer Jr. of Louisville wrote and posted the poem, entitled The Sniper, on a site called newsaxon.org. Special Agent Stephen M. Pazenzia said the poem describes a gunman shooting and killing a tyrant later identified as the president. Spencer is scheduled to appear before U.S. Magistrate Dave Whalen on Friday for a detention hearing. He's in federal custody, charged with making threats against the president and threatening to kill or injure a major candidate for the office of the president, which is interesting because apparently this guy in Kentucky actually wrote this poem back during the campaign in 2007. Now in 2010, almost 3 years later, they are arresting him and charging him for it. Yeah. Now, the question some of you have is, since the organs are now arresting people for posting politically incorrect poetry to the internet, can writing politically incorrect novels be too far behind? Well, I guess I'll be the first to know, won't I? I've already talked about my attitude towards this thing on previous podcasts, and I won't belabor the point. Suffice it to say that I've always been one of those people who think it's better to die on your feet than live on your knees. But this gets into a topic I've been meaning to expound on for some time, and that's the whole general subject of paranoia in the movement, and how it affects our political work and our daily lives. Now, this is a serious subject, and a lot of future history is going to depend on whether or not we can overcome this obstacle. I refer to this rampant paranoia, fear, and mistrust of one another, which now pretty much defines the movement. Somehow or other, we have to find a way to neutralize the psychological scars of many years of very, very bad experience and learn to trust one another and work with one another again. In view of all that's gone before, that's not going to be easy, but it has to be done. I am acutely acutely aware of the fact that a great deal of our paranoia and fear is entirely justified. We do have enemies, evil and powerful enemies, who do in fact seek to do us harm. Almost every week now we hear in the media about some poor dumb cluck like this guy in Kentucky getting arrested or sent to prison on some absurd fabricated charge made up by an informer. We also see people arrested now for posting things to the internet that the regime doesn't like Mr. Spencer. Bill White's case also leaps to mind. It's ironic that as things go from bad to worse in America, thanks to Obongo and the Democrats, sounds like a rock group, Obongo and the Democrats featuring Queen Nancy and Dingy Harry. Anyway, as things go from bad to worse, the power structure has become even more paranoid and fearful about us than we are about them. The vibe is unmistakable. The people in power are, in fact, genuinely afraid of us now, in a way that they never have been before at any time in my experience. You can tell it in the almost hysterical abuse that people like Arianna Huffington and Salon Magazine are screaming at people like Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh, who they have to know are no genuine threat to them. But the liberals and the Jews are in a panic. They feel their power slipping, and they're lashing out in all directions. I think this is because they know something we don't, and that they understand in a way that we do not just how potentially unstable and vulnerable the foul world they've created has become. One can always see more and farther from a higher elevation, and from their perch on the top of the heap, our lords and masters apparently can see something coming down the pike that they don't like. We have far more of a chance to bring about change than we credit ourselves with, but I can't deny that it's also a perilous situation. Frightened people like us with no power are pathetic, but frightened people like our liberal democratic ruling elite, who have the greatest accumulation of power in human history, are very dangerous indeed. But we not only can defeat them, we must defeat them, and that cannot be done from behind an email address or a post office box. The majority of self-described white nationalists in this country are now so afraid of our very shadows that we will not meet with one another or even reveal our names. We will not produce even the most basic personal information necessary to keep in contact with one another. We can't seem to keep away from the movement altogether because we have just enough conscience and introspection remaining to feel guilty about being such worms. So we hang out on the internet at places like Stormfront and VNN, but we live in a daily sweat of fear that somebody might actually find out that we think politically incorrect thoughts. One of the worst and most enraging moments of my life happened recently after the murder of Comrade Jeff Hughes in Vancouver, Canada, in October of last year. For those of you who remember Jeff, you may recall that for years he begged and pleaded for someone in his community in Vancouver to step forward and identify themselves and help him in his racial work so he wasn't keeping up the fight all alone. Now, it turns out that help was a lot closer than he thought, or it should have been. It turns out that all the time Jeff was sitting in that horrible tenement all alone, there was a Stormfront poster right across the street from him, and it is from this anonymous individual that we actually got the first account of Jeff's murder by the RCMP, because this guy actually witnessed part of the incident out of his window. All those years that heroic man sat there all alone, begging for help. And right across the street there was another white nationalist who would not come forward because he was afraid. Yes, in Canada especially, there are grounds for white nationalists to be afraid, but that's not what makes courage courageous. It's not brave to step forward when there's no threat. Courage is when you step forward despite the threat, despite the danger, like Jeff Hughes did. Well, we won't get into that anymore because I really might end up saying something I regret. But let me ask you this. How many white people who have skills and resources and assets and other things that they should be putting at the service of the movement are out there cowering and paralyzed with fear behind their computers? How many members do Stormfront and VNN and White Nationalist Info have? And those are just the ones who still maintain the tenuous contact of anonymous email or internet activity. How many more white people would wish to approach a legitimate group like the Northwest Front, but will never do so out of sheer terror of being found out? It's impossible to gauge, but what if we could get all of these internet addresses, these names, these anonymous people we have posting on just those three boards I just named? What if we could get them together, get them pulling in the same direction, collect that precious $10 a month dues from them so that the movement will be properly financed, and get them to step forward and take on their racial responsibilities? How many thousands of people would we have? Okay, I won't get any further into my anti-internet rave because most of you have heard it before. Let's move on to the general topic of paranoia and how to fight it. Laziness, cowardice, and cheapness are flaws within a man's soul, and they can only be overcome from within each individual. When that man suddenly experiences a moral epiphany and he understands that he can no longer live with what he sees in the mirror every morning. Paranoia can be fought from the outside because it is in fact related to things in the real world. There is a danger that our activity groups will be infiltrated by Zog agents and members will be arrested and framed on bogus charges. But because these fears are in fact based on real dangers, they can be overcome and the risks minimized by specific patterns of behavior on our part. Just because you're paranoid, that don't mean they ain't out to get you. But just because they're out to get you doesn't mean that they will succeed if you follow a few simple rules. Now, what exactly is it that we're afraid of? In most cases, the answer is tragically simple. We live in a society that worships money as a god. Indeed, the word shekel or shekel in Hebrew means little god. Most of us acquire the small green pieces of paper which we worship by working for institutions which are in turn part of the system that's oppressing us and destroying our people. Completely self-supporting craftsmen, businessmen, or artists are now virtually unknown in this society. We are afraid, with reason, that if we publicly oppose the established order, we will be deprived of our jobs, which most of us hate, and we will not be able to obtain the little green pieces of paper which we hold so much dearer than our pride and our honor. To a lesser extent, we are afraid that our co-workers, neighbors, and friends might find out that we're different, that we are not of the body, to quote an old Star Trek episode. We fear that we might be shunned, and white Americans are, above all, herd animals who cannot survive outside the herd. True lone wolves who can live in this society do exist, but they're few and far between. Finally, we're afraid that if we become politically active, one day a funny little man with a funny little tape recorder under his shirt will record enough of our conversation so that a skillful audio mixer and editor working for the federal government can create a fabricated plot to plant pipe bombs or something of the kind. Again, not an unreasonable fear. It happens all the time. So basically, it's like this. White people's lives are ruled by political thugs who credibly threaten us with bodily harm if we don't do what they tell us to do. White people think more of their personal safety and their ability to purchase toys than they do of their own self-respect or their long-term self-interest, never mind the future of their own children. Therefore, in order to prevent our lords and masters from hurting us, white people crawl on their bellies with our tails thumping between our legs. Is that a fair assessment of the situation? I think it is. Now, anyone who accepts this situation, without cavil and without making at least some rudimentary attempt to resist, is not a man, he is a yellow dog. Are we clear on this? In essence, what white males have to decide is how long we are going to be yellow dogs. The problem is that most white males no longer care whether they're perceived as yellow dogs. The average white male sits in his armchair and probably every now and then reflects in his beer and his nacho-sodden mind, "You know, I think I'm probably a yellow dog." Then he picks up the remote and he changes the channel. Now, let me make something clear here. Yet again, I'm a realist. I do not expect hundreds of thousands of middle-aged men with big bellies, accompanied by a few skinny kids with shaven heads and tattoos, to suddenly throw down their remotes, crush the last empty beer can in the six-pack, rise up, and march on Washington like the Bolsheviks storming the Winter Palace. This is not going to happen. I know it, and everybody listening to me knows it as well. What the Northwest Front can do is to locate, identify, enlighten, and motivate the tiny number of exceptions to this rule. Now, these exceptions are most certainly out there, I know, because I hear from them every day. Slowly, slowly, ever so slowly, those rare exceptions, those lone wolves, are beginning to wander in. I'll be honest, most of them are still a bit too long in the tooth for my taste. But there are some younger people as well. Those genuine white lone wolves are beginning to find the NorthwestFront.org website, because one of you listening to this actually posted that website somewhere, like I've asked you to. They are hearing about the Northwest novels, and in spite of the vicious attacks on movement V-bulletin boards from goat-dancing idiots, they are becoming sufficiently interested to actually order a copy of The Brigade or A Mighty Fortress from Amazon.com, or else they download it from Colonel House's free site. They are sending me serious letters and emails asking serious and intelligent questions. Okay, granted, way, way too much of this is still internet, but we have to start somewhere. And more actual physical meeting is taking place. We're finally getting some people who are willing to step out from behind the computer keyboard and get in their cars and do some long-distance driving, and that's incredibly encouraging. That time is on its way, have no doubt of that. But if we are eventually to obtain the prize we seek, a homeland for all our people, we have to work on that moral epiphany, that awakening that I refer to so often. And a large part of that awakening is finding within ourselves the strength to banish paranoia and stop letting it rule our lives. We must understand that men, real men, are morally obligated to do what is right because it is right. And we are not excused from this obligation simply because evil people will hurt us if we do. That, indeed, has always been a traditional price for doing what is right, to be injured by those who do wrong. We must understand that there are more important things in life than money, toys, and the goodwill of the local Rotary Club. If it helps, think of every tyrannical regime that has ever been overthrown in the past few centuries. Cromwell's England, King George's colonial governments here in the United States before 1776. The old royal regime in France, which was overthrown by the French Revolution. The revolutionary regime itself come to that. Of Robespierre and Danton and Napoleon, who succeeded them, and the Russia of the Tsars, the British rule in Southern Ireland, Socialist Italy, 1922, Weimar Republic, the Shah's Iran, the old Soviet Union, East Germany. Every one of these tyrannies I just named had a secret police force of some kind, just like the FBI and the Secret Service and the Department of Homeland Security here. And yet every one of those regimes was overthrown, and the men and the institutions that supported them were dragged down into the dust. What we're talking about doing can be done, because it has been done repeatedly in the past and within living memory. Why do you think the FBI are so terrified that they're arresting people for posting a poem onto the internet? Remember, we may be paranoid about them, but they're just as paranoid about us. To them, we must seem really scary because no matter what they do, no matter how many people they arrest, no matter how many white people like Bill White and Pam Bailey are suffering in prison, we just won't go away. We're like the Hydra in their eyes. They cut off one head and nine more spring out from the bleeding stump. What is paranoia? Paranoia is fear and suspicion and mistrust, however potentially reasonable, which prevents someone from being an effective white activist. What is legitimate security consciousness? Reasonable skepticism, minus the fear, amounting to caution, which helps someone become politically effective and remain so. Always remember that key distinction. Paranoia prevents you from functioning. Security consciousness helps you function. Paranoia destroys the movement. Legitimate security consciousness serves the movement by protecting us from the real machinations of genuine enemies while still making it possible for us to function. It's hard. You have to strike a balance. You have to think before you act. But it can be done, people. Others have done it before us, and we have to do it now, or our race, our civilization, and our species is going to perish from the face of the earth. It's hard, you have to strike a balance, you have to think before you act, but it can be done, people. Others have done it before us, and we have to do it now, or our race, our civilization, and our species is going to perish from the face of the earth. Well, our time is up, and so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington, 98104, or you can go to the party's website, www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sasha on the bottom. Freedom. The rising of the moon.